greetings and salutations, and welcome to this premiere episode of Curtain Call in its new home as part of WJFF's regular Monday night lineup. That's right. I'm Tom Candela, your host, and I am so glad to be here with you. For those who may be joining me for the first time, Curtain Call is a theater-based program where we go beyond the stage lights and take a deeper look into the people, the process, and the stories that bring productions to life, both locally and across the broader theater community, like in New York City and places like that. And as I like to say, spotlighting the magic of theater, one conversation at a time. And for those of you who have been following the show in its podcast format, I want to thank you for making this next step possible. It's exciting to bring these full conversations directly to you right here on WJFF every Monday night at 7 p.m. Now, for this premiere episode, we're focusing on a production that truly celebrates the art form at its core. We're going to be stepping into a world where movement tells the story and where some of the most iconic choreography ever created for Broadway and Hollywood is brought back to life step by step, generation for generation. Now playing at Stage 42 in New York City, Gotta Dance is unlike anything else on stage today. Conceived by Nikki Fiert Atkins, founder and producing artistic director of American Dance Machine for the 21st Century, and co-directed with four-time Tony Award nominee Randy Skinner, this extraordinary production gathers the work of legendary choreographers Jerome Robbins, Bob Fosse, Michael Bennett, Gene Kelly, Susan Stroman, and so many more into one electrifying evening of dance. And joining them is the producer of the show, Ricky Kane Larimer, whose journey from the world of business into theater reflects a deep commitment to relationships and the ability to bring people together around a shared vision. Tonight, we'll explore what it takes to preserve that history and make it live again. Randy, Nikki, and Ricky, I want to welcome all of you to Curtain Call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I'm going to start off the conversation by telling you that I had the pleasure of seeing the show. My wife and I came to a matinee performance about 2 weeks ago tomorrow, and we had an absolute great time. It was a wonderful production, and I was really astounded by the amount of talent. I mean, when we talk about triple threats with the cast that you've chosen and put together, it was just amazing.
Thank you, Dolph.
You're welcome. So I want to actually start with the producer, Ricky, because after building a business, Metricane, alongside your husband and business partner, Bob Larimer, which unfortunately you did lose him shortly after you sold the company in 2014. Did stepping into theater, Ricky, feel like a continuation of something you had built together with Bob?
In a way, yeah. My husband was a wonderful composer and lyricist, and he did have a show on Broadway at the Longacre Theater in 1979, believe it or not, called But Never Jam Today, that was a wonderful musical. And we loved theater. We both loved theater. After we sold Metrocane, makers of the famous Rabbit wine opener,
yes,
Bob passed away, and there I was, all by myself. But a friend of mine said, oh, we're all going over to London to see Memphis, and would you like to be part of it? And I thought, you know what? I just made myself a chunk of money selling the company. I had nothing else to do, and it sounded like a good idea. So I said, yeah, I'm in. And I invested in Memphis, and I came back, and I saw On the Town, and I loved it, and I got involved in that. Mm-hmm. And then I joined the York Theatre Company, and that led to Cagney, and then one thing led to another. And I just love theatre, and I really am passionate about Gotta Dance. I'm so proud of it, and I'm so excited about what we're doing.
But in your business career, timing did play a major role in your success. In fact, I watched one of the interviews that you had, Ricky, where you spoke about the timing for the Rabbit Wine opener and how it came at the right moment in time where it just, you know, just went crazy. Do you approach theater projects with that same instinct of timing?
Yeah, I do. Timing is very important. And we just got very lucky here with the timing because after we had a great run at the York Theater, we had 4 weeks and we were sold out every night. And I just could not face the fact that that was going to be it. After 4 weeks, it's over? Really? That's not fair. That can't happen.
Right.
So I contacted the people at Schubert and I asked if there was anything available, thinking, of course, there won't be anything available. But Michael Coco, who's in charge of Off-Broadway at Schubert, said, you know what? I think I have stage 42 available. I said, you mean the little Schubert is going to be available in March? He said, yes, it is for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, timing is everything. And I just happened to hit it right with this phone call with Michael Coco. And so we started it on March 20th.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you started your previews then. Yep. And it's going, I believe, into June, correct?
It's going into June. And if it's successful, it'll be extended even further. So it's going to hopefully have a long run.
Great. And I want to add something about that venue that you mentioned. That theater, it's about 499 seats, right? Just under 500 or so. There's not a bad seat in the house. During intermission, I was looking around and I thought, any place in this house is a good seat. It's perfect.
Correct.
It's a perfect
correct.
Venue.
There's no mezzanine. There's no balcony. It's all orchestra
right.
with a wonderful rink. And I never knew what a rink meant. But what it means in the theater is it's got a lift to it so that even if you are sitting behind a tall person, which I always do because I'm only 4'10", you can always see. So it's got a beautiful rake. And this theater, incidentally, was built originally for Broadway, but it's actually off Broadway because it has 499 seats. You have to have 500 seats.
Right, to be Broadway.
To be considered a Broadway house.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Well, Nikki, I want to go to you now as co-director, and you conceived this show. What was the original spark that got you thinking about Gotta Dance?
Well, I founded the new iteration of American Dance Machine, which I decided to call American Dance Machine for the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give a little bit of background, there was a wonderful company founded by Lee Becker Theodore back in 1976 called the American Dance Machine, which Randy was one of the first members of. So, and I actually studied with Lee at the very end of my own dance career and had experienced what she was doing, which was creating a living archive of great works of musical theater and choreography. So I was doing this project about Jack Cole, who was considered the father of modern jazz dance. And he did some very interesting work along the way. And then I started wandering about looking at videos of other great choreographers, such as Michael Kidd, Agnes DeMille, Jerome Robbins, mm-hmm. Michael Bennett, or many others. And I thought, why not just revive all of these great works rather than focusing on one person's work? And so I looked back, as I remembered American Dance Machine, because I had experienced it, to see if it was still alive and running. And so it did not exist. And so I set about to restart it. I wanted to revive these great work, but in a way that would be palatable to today's audiences and have sort of a youthful spark to them, but keeping them very closely tuned to the original work. So we had the original choreographers who are still living come in, teach it, or the dancers, if not the choreographer, the dancers on whom the original choreography was staged.
Sure.
And we had Donna McKechnie come in, Chita Rivera worked with us, Carmen de Lavalade, Marge Champion, Jem DeLapp. I mean, we had great people coming in and working with our group of dancers. And it started with three works and just gradually grew. And so I chose five pieces and we presented them. Ricky was there and she fell in love with them. And so she asked if we could perform them at the York Spring Gala, which we did. It was very well received. And then she asked if we could do a program on the main stage. So I just expanded the program, expanded the number of pieces, and that's how this current show was pretty much born.
Well, and how did you decide ultimately which choreographers to include? And I imagine there were some difficult decisions, too, about who not to include, because there are so many great ones. You mentioned many of the ones in history, but even ones alive today, like Susan Stroman, who you did include in the show. But how did you make those decisions?
Well, to be honest, I chose pieces that I love, but also pieces that would work for today's audiences, that we could make feel fresh and appealing to today's audiences. Also, a lot depends on being able to acquire rights. So there are some that they are left out, not by me intentionally, but because I wasn't able to obtain right.
And Randy, I want to go to you now as co-director, and also you did choreograph some of the pieces in this show. Love Potion number 9 from Smokey Joe's, I believe, and I Love a Piano from Irving Berlin's White Christmas. What is the fundamental difference between creating choreography for something that has already been there, that has been known and has been done before, and creating something new for these pieces?
So I just, like anything, I start with the music. Mm-hmm. I sit down and really hear the music in my head and hear the rhythms. And the opening number is a big jazz kind of number that leads into the first reconstructed number, which is Broadway Melody from Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
So it was a really good transition period. And then we needed another moment like that to splice together a number in Smokey Joe's. So we decided, let's use a song that was from Smokey Joe's, but create original choreography for it. And so that's how that all came to be. But it's really, the music leads you everywhere. You just really sit down and get the song in your bone. And me being a tapper, I also hear rhythms in my head. So it's, and drum. So it's a pretty easy process to just meditate with it and then finally get on my feet and do it.
Sure, sure. And there's so many different styles that you're drawing from, very different choreographers such as Bob Fosse and Robbins and Kelly and Michael Bennett, Susan Stroman. How do you help the dancers themselves shift stylistically between those different choreographers?
Well, like Nikki said, we have the wonderful coaches with the people who did it originally. And also you look for that in the audition. I remember when I auditioned for Lee in 1978, when she was going to do the world premiere, it was the roughest audition I'd ever been through, because you were having to do so many different styles. And then you just keep paring down from there. You start with a large group of people, obviously, and you start to explore them, and you give them a ballet combination. And then we always gave, for this show, we gave West Side Story, because it's one of the most technically difficult numbers in the show. And we did some music in the mirror when we needed that lead, the Cassie role, and Donna was there for that. And then at the very end, you whittle away, and then we always throw tap at them, the ones who raise their hand and say, yes, I can tap. And both Nikki and Ricky really wanted to include tapping as much as possible. And that's how you do it. You see it in the room, and then you know it's there and can be pulled out of people. Sometimes they need some extra care and love and attention, but you do see it in the room, and you end up hiring the people that you know can do it.
And in the casting process, what do you prioritize? The technique, their presence? Because they were great. Oh, I mean, it's not just their dancing skills, but their acting skills, their singing skills, of course, true triple threats. They were really, really good. So what are you looking for then when you are watching, I would imagine, initially hundreds of actors and performers auditioning for you? Is it the technique, or is it their presence on stage, or how adaptable they can become?
Well, it's both. I mean, you really do try to get it all. You have to. That's your goal. And I always start first technically. When you have a certain level of choreography in a show, you have to have that technically be able to be done by the dancers. So I look for that first. And then you add on top of that, like you say, the presence, the personality, the vocal. There's always, at the end of the day, you have to sing for a show like this.
Right.
So it's a lot. It's a lot to get, but they're out there. The schools are producing a lot of good kids. We have 3 in the company, a young lady and 2 gentlemen, that all graduated in the same class from the same college.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And they're
amazing.
Wonderful, wonderful dancers and singers, and they come from a very good school, University of Michigan. So you have that. You have a lot of people coming forward nowadays that are exceptionally well-trained by these schools. And so they're out there. that you really do need to stay on track and force yourself to find it. That's really what it's about.
Got it. And again, really, I was really, really impressed. You guys did a great job casting because, again, it's not just the dancing, which they were all very skilled in, but the acting as well, the expression on their faces, even when they weren't center on stage, was spot on. So kudos to all of you doing that. And from your point of view, Nikki, how much research went into these pieces that you ultimately chose when you began working on it?
Well, when I began, I was feverishly reading about these choreographers, studying their work and studying their styles. So that played into it. But when I put the shows together, it sort of choreographed in terms of the sequencing. It's sort of just an instinctive feeling about what should flow into the next. That's why I was very adamant about not wanting spoken word or any kind of narration, verbal. I really wanted things that flowed from one to the next. So that was really an important part of putting it together. I just wanted something that flowed choreographically, musically, and all that.
And historically, too, it was very interesting because I think audience-wise, it touches everybody from older people who will recognize something like Broadway Melody, Gene Kelly work, Stanley Donen work, to Sue Stroman in Contact. So from older audiences to younger people, I think it really interests everybody. Everybody could recognize some of the music that was played and some of the songs that were done or any the choreography. Of course, West Side Story, everybody recognizes that. So that was great to have that wide range of choices.
What's phenomenal to me is the range of ages of people who are coming to the show and enjoying
it. Yeah.
Because generally it in the Joy situation, it's an older group of people that generally come to the Joy by subscription and they love this sort of thing because they have an appreciation for it from having seen a lot of it. But this time around, there's all different ages, people in their 20s, a large number of young people. But what's really extraordinary is that people are bringing tiny little children, toddlers.
Oh, really?
And they don't utter a peep. When you go to see the Nutcracker or the Christmas show, there's always little
noise
in there.
Yeah.
They make noise.
Yeah.
Yesterday, for example, for our matinee, there were two busloads of pre-K and kindergarten age, so like 3 to 5. And I was wondering, how is this going to happen? And they absolutely didn't make a peep during the entire show, which was astounding.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really have any children's shows included in the show like Matilda or Newsies or Frozen. Things that they could relate to, but for some reason they were mesmerized. And it's extraordinary, actually.
Yeah, I would say a lot has to do with the performers. They're just electrifying. Yeah, and myself, I like to watch the audience. I kind of look around during performance sometimes, and I noticed like a lot of heads bobbing and toes tapping and people even like lip syncing to some of the songs or singing some of the songs. What do you think creates that immediate connection between the audience and what they're seeing?
Well, I think music is a universal, wonderful music, melodic songs, but also the energy of the dancers on stage and how immersed they are in the work and how good they are at doing it. I think it excites the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's like I said, it's electrifying. It really is. Ricky, I want to go back to you for a second. And again, I want to get the background of this show and let our listeners know how these shows are produced. When you, as a producer, and you come across a show like this, and you have to go and get investors and collaborators to believe in something that doesn't yet exist, how do you bring along people in that process for a show like Gotta Dance?
Okay. Well, first of all, when I saw this show, at the very early stages of it, I absolutely fell in love with it. And as it developed, I said, we have to bring this to the next level. Well, I approached a couple of people, but they're busy and they have their own stuff and they're doing a museum and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this by myself. I'm fortunate in that I'm able to do it. And I'd rather not involve any investors or any co-producers or any partners, because I don't want to have any arguments with people. When they start, when they have an investment, they immediately think that they own the show and they want to make changes and they want to do this, they want to do that. I'm lucky. I was able to do it on my own, and I it's all mine. So I didn't have to bring in anybody.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I am so happy about that fact that it's all mine. Randy, he tells me that I remind him of David Merrick.
Big time producer.
True.
And I love that comparison. I mean, I'm hardly on that level, but I really do love the fact that I'm the sole producer of this show.
That's great. I didn't know that. And that's very exciting. It's classic. When it got too many people involved, it's that classic too many chefs in the kitchen type thing.
Too many cooks.
Yeah, too many cooks. Everybody has a recipe, right, of how the show should run. So that's good. So do you see then any parallels between, because you've launched products before, you had a big business, any parallels between launching a product and launching a show?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the development of a product and the development of a show, they're both businesses.
Yeah.
And the objective of an item like I produced, which is the Rabbit Corkscrew, is to sell the product to as many people as possible. And in the case of a show, it's to put asses in seats, as David Merrick always said. So, yeah, I mean, you have to look at the bottom line. You do everything you can to advertise it, promote it through publicity, public relations, and marketing. And it's the same thing here. The more people who see it, they tell two people, and they tell two people, and they tell two people, and before you know it, we have a hit on our hands.
Yeah.
It looks like we're practically there. People are talking about it. There's a buzz. Same thing with the product. People are talking about, oh, did you see the Rabbit Corkscrew? Oh, my God, it's fabulous. Oh, I hear it. And it's very, lots of similarities between a company like I had, Metro Kane, and a show like Gotta Dance.
Yeah.
A lot of similarity. The objective here is to have a great product and to move it up.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure people know about it. And that's it. That's the trick. That's the whole idea.
And when you are schmoozing it up like that, when you are pitching it, are you pitching the team, the vision, the what's in the show? How do you pitch it?
We do it through all kinds of media. And it's different than it used to be. It's not as much print as it is social media. That's the whole purpose of my life right now, is to schmooze it up. I just tell people that you will forget about all your troubles. You'll forget about whatever's going on in the world. You will just have the time of your life because it's entertaining. And yet, it's a piece of Broadway history. Here we have a combination of all these different choreographers on one stage. And that's what makes this show, Gotta Dance, so unique. And that's the way I schmooze it up.
Well, you're doing a good job, because just listening to you makes me want to see it again. Of course, that show we're talking about, folks, is Gotta Dance, playing at Stage 42 in New York City. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll get back to the second half of our conversation right after this break.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, are you sure that that squeeze bottle of honey in your cupboard is actually honey?
They're openly advertising designer syrups, saying mix this much with your honey to pass these certain tests to get into the United States.
The surprising economics of the honey industry, that's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Okay, and we're back talking about Gotta Dance, fantastic new show that is playing at Stage 42 in New York City. We're talking with Nikki Fiert Atkins, Randy Skinner, and Ricky Kane Larimer. Randy, I'm going to go over to you. We spoke a little bit before the break about the triple threats within the show and you as co-director. I want to ask a little bit more about the acting. I know we mentioned technique and certainly their ability to adapt to the different dance styles, but how are you getting such great performances out of, acting-wise, out of these performers? They're wonderful.
Well, that's a combination of not only the team that puts the show together, but our wonderful stagers, because they lived those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Such as Donna McKechnie, having created the role of Cassie, she knows the role inside and out. So then when you're in the room with her and Jessica Lee Golden, who plays the role, you just have that built-in coat. Same thing with the Robin pieces and my piece, you know, that from White Christmas, you're right there. That's the nice thing about a show like this, having the direct link to either the actual choreographer who still might be living or the associate who is working with them. Susan has wonderful associates that came in, and she came in herself also to work on Contact. So you're really getting it from the original source. That is the best way. It's not going through any kind of channel.
So you're saying Sue Stroman came in. She was on the show not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and we talked a lot about Contact and how that idea came to play for her. I mean, for the girl in the yellow dress. So Susan was able to come in and sort of help or give her input into the piece, or did she actually direct it for the piece or choreograph it for the...
What usually happens is the piece goes up by assistant or associate, because that takes a lot of time and the drilling. And then the original people, if they are still around, are invited to come in and put finishing touches to talk about, like you say, the intent behind the number, the acting choices. And it's layered. But you really can't do that kind of work until the choreography is in the body. And that's where the drilling takes place and just teaching the steps, the nuts and bolts of the step.
I see.
Each number really has a team involved, which makes it go up pretty easily. It's been remarkable to see that, because everybody knows what they're doing and everybody's good at what they do.
Very good. And I mentioned, too, a little bit about how the audience is responding to the performances themselves. I mentioned people toe-tapping, and literally, I was watching some, there was a man in my row that he was just bobbing up and down and really enjoying it. Nikki, how much do you think the performers are aware of that energy from the audience, and are they feeding off that as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no question. It's a lot of what makes the performance exciting is the exchange of energy between the dancers and the audience.
Mm.
Very much so. And I just want to just comment a little bit just on what Randy was sharing, which was exactly right on in terms of what makes the performances have depth. That they're just not learning off of a video where they learn depth and count. It's so much more than that. When Stroman comes in, she talks about how the genesis of Contact, how the thought process behind it, the story behind it. And it's so important that the pieces are nuanced with that kind of intent, original intent. So they're not flat performances. So yes, there's a definite energy exchange.
Yeah, that sure is. It sure is. And I don't know how much the performers can see the audience, because we're generally sitting in the
dark. It doesn't matter. It's the energy.
You can feel it, right? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You could really feel what's going on. And I think that gets them going too, right? When you have that exchange of energy back and forth. Yeah. To you now again, Ricky, are you noticing any of that yourself, of how the show might change a little bit based on how an audience is responding to the performers on stage?
Oh, yes. Every single show has its own unique personality, every performance. It's astounding to me how these performers can just keep doing it, and they just keep getting better. And they're so accurate with every single gesture and every little motion.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me. And as Nikki said, we do have an extraordinary number of young people that come to this show. And I just don't know. It's a mystery to me how word got around that it's great for kids. I would say that on average, there's about 20% really young people. I'm talking teenagers and preteens. It's just so interesting. I think it comes through social media, which is such an important part
in today's
day. So I love to see the audience reaction. And I think that every show, every performance is different. It definitely varies.
Yeah. Yeah. That energy, though, is really something. And you mentioned earlier about the show yesterday, I think you said, Nikki, about some of the really, really young kids coming into the show, which is very unusual for Broadway. In fact, I think usually they say no kids under eight, right?
But well, I think it's no kids under four. But I took pictures of them just to show there are some little tiny ones that look like they were two or three.
Wow. That's amazing. And they're paying attention. So that just goes to show you.
Not a beep during the show.
Wow.
Not a single sound. No.
I think they're fascinated by the dancing.
Well, the dancing is obviously big visual, but it's also the songs, the lighting, all of it. I mean, there's so much activity on stage and so many talented people that it's hard to take your eyes off it. It really is. So I would imagine for little kids too, the music and the dancing is just fascinating. And again, as I mentioned before, there's no bad seat in the house. Everybody feels like they're close up. So the kids probably never sat that close to a show. But yeah, very, very exciting. So in watching the shows multiple times, you've seen Ricky, the different audiences and the different responses to it. I'm sure it's brought an energy to you and make you feel like saying yes to the show. It's sort of confirmed all your instincts. Am I right?
Yes, it does confirm my instincts. And I love to hang out after the show is over.
Yeah.
And I love to talk to people and say, how'd you like it? Did you have a good time? We loved it. It's terrific. And then I like to ask, how did you hear about it? Because this gives me information as to what's working from a marketing standpoint.
Oh, that's great.
And it's just so interesting and so much fun from a business standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I keep rolling the numbers over and over in my head and how many seats we need to sell in order to break even, how many seats we need to sell to make money. It's a business.
Yeah, and you're taking your business acumen and putting it into Broadway producing, I think, is brilliant. How you're canvassing the audience and saying, how did you hear about this, to find out how your marketing is working. I mean, that's brilliant stuff. And then you know where to put more money if you need to. So you've said yes to this show and others. What does no feel like to you? When do you ever come across that? I don't think you as a no person.
The answer to that question is very simple. You go by your gut. My gut tells me what I like, and I just believe that if I like it, the audiences are going to like it. Mm-hmm. I get invited to invest in so many different shows, and most of the time, almost all the time, I say no because I don't like the show. I have to feel passionate about a show, and you have to really care about it. And if you love it and if you feel it, there's a feeling that you get and it clicks in.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And that's the show for me.
And you got great instincts, it seems, because not only in the business world of choosing products that just exploded, but also shows that are doing the same thing. So kudos to you. Brandy, you've experienced theater as a choreographer, as a director, as a performer yourselves. In this process with Gotta Dance, what has been the most rewarding part for you?
It's always working with the talent. Music, like I said, music's everything. So having a show like this with the incredible song and tuneful song, it is also a joy to be in the room. You never tire of that. But it's seeing the dance talent, which is just always such a big high for anybody who comes from that kind of a background themselves. To see the level of technique, the joy that they have, the curiosity they have about learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a real pleasure to be in a room with a group of dancers of this caliber. That's really as simple as it is, but it's incredibly exciting.
Sure. And do you find yourself sitting in on some of the performances yourself and just watching and enjoying? As opposed to being technical.
I don't always hover as much as maybe some other people that like to be there all the time. And I'll tell you why that is. It's because I see things I want to keep changing. And it's hard for choreographers and directors because you want to keep fiddling, looking for that perfect step. And I'm talking about my own numbers, not the other people's numbers in the show. But to this day, even White Christmas, my gosh, it was done 20-some years ago. We had a twice on Broadway, and we had a tour for 19 years until COVID shut us down. And I still, every single year, would fiddle with the show. And I think most people feel that way about their work. If you happen to have a show that runs a long time, or you have the opportunities to put out tours where you can keep starting over again, you're never quite satisfied because you are reaching for perfection. So I go when I need to really check on things and look at new people on a show, of course. But yeah, I don't go as often as Ricky because I'm looking at it through a little bit of a different eye, and it drives me a little crazy when I want to put a new step in. Of course, you can't do that to people. They want to settle and they like doing things. Now, it depends on the person. I remember when I did State Fair with both Donna McKechnie and a wonderful dancer named Scott Wise was in that show. I could give Donna a new step at intermission, and she put it in an act two.
Wow.
When I wanted to make changes with Scott, he needed time. So he would do the old version until he got the new step in his body, and then he would put it in the show. So people do work differently, both brilliant dancers, but that's also, I think, how you learn to work with different people. You see what they need and what kind of rehearsal technique they have. And you have to go with that. Not everybody is the same. Not everybody comes with the same amount of training or were treated the same way when they were younger. So you zero in on that because you want the room to be positive and you want everyone to feel good about their work. So you have to be flexible when you're directing and choreographing.
Sure. And of course, the show begins with a piece that you choreographed, Broadway Rhythm. It's the opening number. And that has to begin with a bang, and it gives us, as the audience, a look into what we can expect for the rest of the show. So, and putting that together, I'm sure when you sit back, there's always something else you see that you might want to stick in or throw in to give it that extra boost.
Or you'll hear something in an arrangement, you go, oh, why didn't I do that? It's the nature of the beast, and I think everybody will tell you the same thing.
Of course.
You're just never quite satisfied. I've read great biographies on many, many people, and that seems to be a running thing to the personality of creative people. They just are constantly reaching for that next level that they want to go to. And I have learned that most people like to eventually settle and enjoy the run of a show and not be plagued with learning new things all the time.
Yeah. But still, it's always good to have that eye out in the audience that could tell
That's
you,
right.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, you just turn this way, face this way or whatever. And that helps that.
Well, that's
more.
What good dance captains do. We have a terrific dance captain on board and they watch from the wings or they're involved in maintaining rehearsals. And those are key people on a show. They're just absolutely key people. And then, and of course, the fact that Ricky goes and that Nikki goes a lot. They have their eye, too. So it's a real good system. It really works when you have good people on board that care to the degree that everybody cares on this production.
Yes. And it's a collaboration, right? I mean, you mentioned Nikki and Ricky. So Nikki, as your co-director and collaborator, when we have Randy coming in and he wants to make a change and you may not want to make a change, what is the exchange between the two of you?
That has not happened yet.
Touch wood, everybody.
We haven't really had to deal with it. I feel like Randy and I work really well together. We have a slightly different focus in terms of what we're doing as co-directors. Yeah. And so there has really not been a real conflictual situation like that, luckily. I feel like.
That's great.
We really trust each other. We trust each other's judgment and viewpoint. And like Nikki said, she wears hats in certain departments. I wear hats and it really mixes well. But it is about trust. It's wonderful to have that. It really makes things go incredibly smoothly.
That's great. And it shows.
And I just want to add that Randy and I have been friends for a long time and have wanted to do a project together. And it's been really great to be able to share the project with Randy.
From a business standpoint, I just want to say that we have a fabulous team of people. We have a terrific general manager. That's so important in a show like this, to have the general manager who really is involved in all of the heavy aspects of the show, I mean, in terms of business. And then we have a wonderful attorney and a financial manager. I mean, it takes a village.
Yeah.
We just have a wonderful, wonderful team of people. Great marketing guys, terrific PR guys. I am so happy with this organization. And it just meshes together so beautifully. And that's what part of what's making it work. But no matter what, you have to have a great show. If you have a great team of people, but if the show isn't good, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you have a dream team there, Ricky, with all the people you just mentioned that the audience doesn't get to see, doesn't know about, that are in the background.
Right.
Including, as what you mentioned, Randy, dance captains and folks like that who are a vital part of producing
the
show.
And I want to just give a special shout out to our associates who are phenomenal, particular Andrew Winan, who's our associate director, black choreographer, who is invaluable to the team in terms of helping to put numbers up and rehearse them to the point where they are incredibly clean and beautiful to watch. So, and there's Kathy Lubeck-Bogelman also, who has assisted a lot of the stagers in putting the work together. So that's been invaluable as well.
I want to ask this question to you, Nikki, because it's a question I asked Sue Stroman, because she too watches a lot of her shows, particularly during previews, of course. When sitting back in the audience and watching what you and Randy and Ricky have created, along with the rest of your team, what brings you the most joy?
I think, so I write down the list of numbers that I like to do, and I put them in a certain order on paper. And I liken it to sort of interior design, which is kind of a hobby of mine, where you put together paint colors and wallpaper and on the kitchen table, and they look great on the kitchen table, but you never know how they're going to look when you put them up on the wall in certain sunlight and whatever. So I'm always a little nervous the first time I see it come off the paper and into the bodies of the dancers. And with this particular show, I almost cried. I feel like the first time that I saw it up on the bodies of the dancers, that was at the York in the rehearsal hall when we first put the show together. So I watch it from that perspective, and when a number is shown that almost moves me to tears, or often does move me to tears, that's the way I want to feel about it. So I look for a lot of things when I'm in the audience watching.
Yeah.
And I find it thrilling a lot of times just seeing it being performed so well.
No, fantastic. And that's what brings you joy, is sitting there and experiencing that each time. And each time it's a little bit different, isn't it?
And we have notes, of course, that things aren't being performed so well.
Yeah, of course.
That need fixing.
That's part of the process.
That's part of the practice.
Yeah. Well, Randy, I do want to respect your time. I know you have to leave, so I'm going to say goodbye. I only have one other question that I'm going to put to Ricky, and then we're going to close out this episode of Curtain Call, but I want to thank you.
Yes, I will, because I'm off to teach 30 young hopeful.
Yes.
With stars in their eyes.
There you go. There you go.
A whole nother level, yeah. These are just kids that are starting out and finishing their colleges, and so it's a whole nother opposite kind of approach from dealing with the kind of dancers we have on our show currently.
Right.
So it's exciting to have both ends of the spectrum. So thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate your time.
For all of this attention, and I'm glad you love our show.
Oh, it was great. But thank you, Randy. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, Ricky, the question, basically, it's more of a statement, because the show, we know where it's playing, Gotta Dance. I want you to just basically give audiences where, when, and how to get tickets.
Okay. Telechard is a wonderful way, and it's easy. Or our website, which is gotadanceshow.com. So that's another way to get tickets. Or you can just, if you happen to be in the neighborhood, the theater is on 42nd Street, close to 10th Avenue, and there's a big sign out front. There's a marquee that says Gotta Dance, and it's a beautiful theater. So it's very easy to get tickets, and we're just so proud of this production, and we love it so much, and we're just so excited about the future of it. Right.
And the theater's located at 422 West 42nd Street. That's stage 42. You're right, Ricky, big sign out front. When I came in, I think I parked on 43rd Street, or maybe 41st Street. Came around the corner.
There is a parking lot right across the street from the theater.
Yeah, so that's convenient as well. And it is a great house. As I said, no seat is a bad seat. So, and the shows go Monday through, or is it Tuesday through Sunday?
Yeah, we have a unique schedule. We have a show Monday night, which
you
is
do.
Very unusual, because most theaters are dark on Mondays.
Right.
But we opted to be open Monday night. We're dark Tuesday. We have a matinee Wednesday and a show Wednesday night. We have a matinee on Thursday, which is unusual to have a Thursday matinee. Matinees are at 2:30. And then we have a Friday night show at normal time, 7:30. And then Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and then Sunday at 3. So there's 8 shows a week, 4 matinees and 4 evening shows.
Okay. And that too is kind of smart because you're open when all the other shows are closed, right? So people still have something to see who happen to be in New York City on a Monday.
That was a great idea because so often I want to see something on a Monday night.
Right.
There's really nothing to see.
Yeah.
Because all the Broadway houses, they're closed on Monday.
Yeah, they're all dark.
So I love this idea of having a still Monday night.
That's great. And then you got the Thursday matinee. Hence the young people who were bussed in, I guess, yesterday to see the show.
I love that idea as well because through our nonprofit, American Dance Machine for the 21st Century Nonprofit, we are trying to build our educational program and we can have children from city schools, public schools come in and see the show. I think that's a great educational aspect.
So if there was a group out there, Nikki, who just heard what you just said, how do they make contact? The same way through Got a Dance Show, or is there another way?
I believe there's a way to, and Ricky, you can answer this if you know how to purchase group sales. It's a group sales kind of situation.
Okay.
It tells you on the web.
Yeah, I think you're right. On the gotadanceshow.com, I think I did see something about group tours or group shows, group tickets.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm going to say goodbye to both of you. Okay.
Thank you so much.
And many thanks once again to Ricky Kane Larimer, Nikki Ferret Atkins, and Randy Skinner for such a thoughtful and wide-ranging conversation. You know, before we move on to our next segment, I want to take a moment to highlight a few things that really stood out in that discussion for me because they offer a glimpse into parts of the theater world we don't always get to hear about. We often talk about theater in terms of, you know, the artistry, and rightly so. But what can sometimes get overlooked is the reality that commercial theater is, at its core, a business. Hearing Ricky Kane Larimer talk about connecting with audiences after the show, asking how they heard about it, tracking what's working from a marketing standpoint, and even thinking through the numbers night after night, that's a perspective we don't always get to see. Think about that. Think about what's behind the curtain, what goes into a production, and consider how important you, as participants in the audience, are in that process. And then there's the perspective of the director or choreographer. Sometimes, you know, we don't often get a window into that world. We tend to think about the creation of a show, the rehearsal room, opening night, but not what it's like to live with a piece over time, that constant drive to refine, to adjust, to get just a little closer to what you're aiming for. And I think Randy spoke about that very succinctly. And at the same time, you know, you're trying to step back and let the work breathe on its own. And finally, something that's easy to miss entirely if you're sitting in the audience is the team behind the scenes that keeps a show running at that level night after night. People like dance captains who are watching from the wings, maintaining the choreography, keeping everything sharp and consistent, along with the directors and producers who continue to check in, observe, and support the work. These are the kinds of roles many audience members may never even hear about, but they're absolutely essential. And what you start to see when you take all of this together is that a production like Gotta Dance isn't just about what happens on stage. It's about collaboration. We talked a lot about that in past episodes and how important that is. It's also about care. And it's about a group of people on stage and off working together to bring that experience to life every single night. Now, speaking of being in the room, this next segment is all about exactly that. It's time for the Roving Thespian. That's me. And this week, I found myself at the River Rep Theater's 3rd annual gala. Is it gala or gala? Gala, I think. And what a night that was. Gosh, I had so much fun. The place was packed with supporters, the energy was high, and there was a real sense of excitement about what's ahead. We were treated to sneak peeks of their upcoming season, including the return of The Neverending Story, the premiere of their version of Rhinoceros. That's the Eugene Ionesco piece, absurdist piece. River Rep Jr.'s A Midsummer Night's Dream. Yes, these kids are taking on Shakespeare, believe it or not. And by the way, in future episodes in a couple of weeks, you're going to hear from some of those young performers right here on Curtain Call. So it was an evening filled with creativity, excitement, and plenty of laughs, and I had the chance to speak with some of the artists and supporters who were helping to make it all happen. So let's have a listen. All right, we're here at the River Rep 3rd Annual Gala. I'm speaking with Mr. Greg Triggs. I did a great set tonight, Greg. I think you killed it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I was doing improvisation with my new friend John, a young man who seemed to enjoy himself but really helped me make it all up.
He has a nice kid, and you did great with him. I loved what you did. Improv is a lot of fun. You really were a highlight of the night. What's your connection with the River Rep?
Well, I am a producer in New York City. I produce a improv show called Broadway's Next Hit Musical, and I'm going to be directing at the DVAA and the Tustin Theater in the fall. And we are so lucky to have such a vibrant art scene here in Sullivan County that whatever I can do to support other artists, I'm going to be there.
That's wonderful, much appreciated. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the community here, I was very surprised by how great a community we have, how many different theater companies there are, and how talented the people really are. So you're going to be with DVA this fall? What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to be directing a 50th anniversary production of Our Town at the Tustin Theater the last two weekends in October.
And you're bringing a New York City cast, or you're casting locally?
Casting locally.
Wonderful. You got that cast already?
No, auditions. The dates for auditions are at the end of May and are posted on the DVAA website.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'll look out for it. As I was saying, I'm with Curtain Call. I'm going to have a full one-hour show starting next week. Would love to have you on to talk about Our Town and what you're bringing to our community.
I would love to do that. Congratulations.
Thank you. Here's my card. Well, we're here with Lizabel, who is on the show not too long ago.
Yes, we were last year. We did your show. I'm Melissa Bell. I just saw River Rep Gala performance, which was a terrific show. I mean, I really enjoyed Greg Triggs with his little boy, the little JJ. I know that was not his name, but oh my gosh, it was very funny. And everybody was so great. It was a whole variety show. Actually, we should do more of those things.
It really was a fun night. Gave us a good insight to what the season is.
Yes. I've seen two or three of their productions, more, and I've really enjoyed them. They like me to come because they like my laugh. Because I'm in the audience and I start and I laugh at things. And Leo and I both have very big laughs. So they like
but
us to come.
They are a good audience member. I see you all the time out there supporting all these theater companies. You are, however, a part of the Farm Arts Collective Ensemble. Tell us a little bit about that this year.
Well, we're working on a show for the summer called Johnny Appleseed, and it's about the life and times of Johnny Appleseed. It's to help celebrate the 250th year of America, talking about some of our heroes and maybe myths, and then also to celebrate the orchard that's coming to Willow West Farm. And then Farm Arts is also doing another show called Seeds of Troy, which is going to be very interesting in the fall. So there's a lot going on. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on there all summer. So it's really becoming a wonderful agricultural center. And I'm just really happy to always be a part of it and always be doing fun things. And, you know, you can't make theater without a theater company. And that's really what makes things come alive is, like, as you just saw, it's a collaboration. It's people working together to make things, you know, fun and interesting and better and just to be here to entertain us. And also just to sort of, as you were saying, they were pulling up a mirror to humanity. and yes, and our community. So it's a great artistic community here. I feel it all the time.
Yeah, I never get tired of it. I get amazed by it, of how much there is out here. We saw a great taste of it tonight with all the different acts. It's getting a little piece of this, that, and the other thing that they're going to be showing us. And you're absolutely right. Greg Triggs was hysterically funny with little Johnny.
What a cute kid. Oh, my gosh. It was just precious and funny. And the lady in the beginning there, when he said, give us a noun, and she couldn't think of a noun. It was so, anyway, yeah. Yep.
I loved it. Well, Melissa, I want to thank you for, again, being part of Curtain Call. As I said, I see you all the time at all these performances. It's always good to see you.
Supporting theater.
Yes. And I'll be out to see some of your shows at Farm Arts. You're going to the big birthday bash, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We will be there. Yes.
For 40-60, or is it 60-40? We're not telling you who's who, but you'll figure it out.
That's right. Okay. Well, great to see you, too.
All right. Bye-bye, Melissa.
Bye-bye.
Now, didn't that sound like a lot of fun? It was. It really was. And my thanks to everyone at River Rep Theater for such a warm and welcoming evening. It was a terrific night and a wonderful reminder of just how much energy, creativity, and community exists right here in our own local theater scene. And before we go, just a quick look at what is happening in our local theater community this very week. On the 24th at 7 p.m. at Farm Arts Collective, they are celebrating in style with their big birthday bash honoring Tana Squalchek and Jess Beveridge, with an evening of music, food, and festivities, including a DJ, cake, and plenty of surprises to go along with that. And then Saturday night, the 25th, over at NACL in Highland Lake, 7:30 p.m., they're bringing back Luminescence 2. It's a return of a favorite, an immersive high-energy experience designed to shake off the winter months and reawaken the senses with sound, movement, and light. Two great opportunities to get out, folks, connect, and experience the creativity happening right here in our community. And the best part is, as far as Curtain Call is concerned, there is much more ahead. In the coming weeks on the show, I'll be bringing you conversations with the artists and organizations shaping this season, including Farm Arts Collective, River Rep Jr., NACL, Shadowland Stages, Forestburg Playhouse, and so much more. So whether it's a new work, returning favorites, or productions you may be discovering for the very first time, there's a lot to look forward to. And we'll be right here to bring it to you on WJFF's new show, Curtain Call. Until then, I do hope that you get the chance to get out yourselves and see a show, support the artists, and experience everything that live theater has to offer. I'm Tom Candela, and this has been Curtain Call. And I do appreciate you listening, and hope you listen in next time. Have a good evening, folks.
The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance celebrates 50 years of advancing the arts in Sullivan County and looks forward to the next 50 years with its anniversary gala, May 16th at the brand new terminal building at Sullivan County International Airport. Featuring seasonal local food and installations and performances by local artists and performers. Information at dvaa50.org. Paid for by the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, advancing the arts since 1976.
This Week in This American Life, woman goes into a casino, plays blackjack, loses a ton of money, and then sues the casino. Which, of course, raises a question.
What? Why is she not liable? It seems like if you go to a casino, that's like, you know what you're doing.
Because at the time of those losses, she has...
Stories about blackjack this week.
No, This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media. You know, the media aren't some monolithic other out there to get you. Across myriad platforms, it carries countless ideas and agendas, and you're part of it all. So don't get lost in an ever-evolving media landscape. This program says you are here with analysis, context, deep dives, and a much-needed deep breath. On the Media, Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.